Well, good morning, everyone. Thank you, everybody, for coming. And we got a small crowd. If anybody in the back, you know, wants to see some videos, come on up to the front, cozy up. Don't be afraid. So my name is Carl Haravon-Mogul. I'm a grad student in plant breeding and plant genetics at UW-Madison. And with my advisor, Sean Kepler, and our co-PI, Bill Tracy, we've been making some educational videos about plant breeding. And we have two series of videos, and one of them is called Fields of Study, and the other one, Pollination Methods. And we started with the question of how do we educate people about plant breeding, the general public, and then also students who may be interested in the field, and students who are going into the field. And the videos are being produced in collaboration with the Instructional Media Development Center at UW-Madison. And they'll be available, actually many of them are available, at wisconsinplantbreeding.com, which is our plant breeding and plant genetics program website. The URL will be up again at the end of the presentation. And they're also available on YouTube at the Wisc Plant Breeding account. So the first video series is called Fields of Study, and the purpose of this one is to generate interest in plant breeding as a career option for students that haven't really heard much about it. Myself, I'm going into plant breeding. I never heard about it until I was late, almost done with being an undergrad. And we emphasize three things. We do interviews with plant breeders, and we have them talk about what they do as a plant breeder on a day-to-day basis. And then we talk about some of the issues of diversity, the genetic and phenotypic diversity of the crops that they work on, and then how they select from that diversity from many plants to choose a few good ones that will pass on and become crops that people grow and eat. And then finally, to try and really get some interest going, we have them talk about what they really find exciting about plant breeding as a career. But I could talk about all the stuff that they're going to say, but let's do a video.
Early in my career, I was able to introduce a variety of sweet corn that actually had relatively high quality, but also was able to germinate very quickly in cold soil, which is invaluable to the farmer. Plant breeder, I'm always looking for differences between plants, so all of a sudden something says a lot of rust or something like that, then we can select against that and select for something that's better. I go out to the field and I see basically organisms that I've created and that have never ever existed before. And that's a very unique opportunity. And when you think about some of the fact that some of those developments, some of those new organisms that have never existed before could be useful to people, could help a farmer be more profitable, could help somebody in have better nutrition, or could actually help feed hungry people, it's awfully exciting.
I always loved biology and genetics. Realized that plant breeding and plant genetics was a way to combine love of biology with the ability to make a big difference around the world. So one of the exciting things about plant breeding is the surprise. Another exciting thing is that often nature creates combinations that I couldn't have imagined. And so my job becomes easy then, simply to select a combination that appears to be a winning combination, even if I don't entirely understand how we generated it. Agriculture is the dominant land use globally, so we know that changes in agriculture will have a huge impact on our global environment. So people with this training find themselves with a whole array of possible ways to contribute to improving the lives of people all around the world.
I knew I wanted to be a plant breeder, and as part of the curriculum, I was taking a course in forages. And I sat there on the first day listening to this forage evangelist, Daryl Miller. He was a professor at the University of Illinois, an alfalfa breeder. Very inspiring guy. and I was sold right away on the first day. I knew that this is what I was going to do for the rest of my life.
I had a very strong science background before I went into plant breeding, and it's been the chemistry and the physics and the math that has really been helpful, because I can do things that allows me to do some very basic thinking that I think has been very helpful throughout my career. Things are going to change more in the next 25 years than they've changed in a lot of times, but plants are going to be called upon to solve environmental problems. Energy is just one of them. There's phytoremediation. We're going to be looking at pharmaceuticals from plants. Plants are going to become more critical to us for not only food and fiber, but for energy and for a lot of other uses. So I think if I was going to be in plant breeding, this is about as good a time as you thought.
So that's just a little montage of the three breeder videos we have online right now. We also did an interview with Xingting Zhang from Syngenta, who's a watermelon breeder, and we're working on editing that one. So the next series of videos, Pollination Methods, is about how to actually make sunless crosses, and this is intended as a tool for classrooms. It's very difficult to get a lot of experience with different crops in a classroom environment. So the idea is to bring it in virtually so then you can see how it's done and maybe try it out in your backyard or perhaps pair it up with some of those little mini instructional type plants that some people have. And so in each one of these videos, I talk about the basic biology of several different species or just one species. And that could include the number of chromosomes, what type of flowers and breeding systems are going on in those species. Give a snapshot of the what we know about the origins and the diversity within those crops, and then of course the techniques that are used to make the different crosses, and then the simple bits of equipment that they need to do so. And then I also talk about how to scale it up from the small scale to a large scale. And each one of the videos I've added a little extra section on some interesting genetic concept or thing that's going on in each of those crops. Such as for maize, I talk about heterosis. For cucurbits, I talked about how seedless watermelons are generated. Not very many people know how that happens. So I chose a bunch of different species that give a good overview of the different types of flower types and breeding systems that there are. There are the open-pollinated crops like maize, and then there are self-pollinated grains and legumes, and we've got some fruit trees, and then lilies, which apparently have a big backyard hobbyist breeding following. And currently the maize, solanum, and cucurbits videos, and solanum includes the peppers and tomatoes and potatoes, those are online right now. The peppers will be online very soon, waiting on some nice high-res images to come by email. And then the carrots and beets will follow, and small grains, legumes, lilies, and then fruit and nut trees. And I've had our onion breeder begging me to do an onion video, but I might go rogue and do one down the road to satisfy him. But one of the things I try to do for each of these videos is to get you as close to the biology of the plant as possible. So for oats, for example, I've got some microscope-aided photos of the crossing process of pulling apart the spikelets and opening it up delicately to take the anthers out and put them in to make your cross. And then got some high-resolution images of the flowers themselves. You can get close and see what they look like. And also for the lily video, which is going to be sort of our flagship video about just pollination biology itself, because it's a very simple and easy flower that people can cross, I've got a computer animation of the pollination process. You can go down and see what's going on with the pollen tube and stuff like that. And we haven't done any evaluations of how well these videos work, but we've gotten a couple of awards for them. There's this plant biology video contest called Chlorofilms. We won a couple of times with that. It's the second place and first place awards for some of these videos. And I'm happy to report that the maize pollination methods video has about 11,700 hits on YouTube from the past year. So apparently a lot of people like learning about how maize gets down. So with that, I would like to field any questions that you have about my videos.
I have one question, I guess. I'm pretty impressed.
Well, so the question was, if I'm doing all this myself, what kind of background do I have in media to do this? Well, first, I'm not doing it entirely by myself. Depending upon the series, my involvement is more direct or less direct. We've got some guys that do the filming at the Instructional Media Development Center, IMDC, and they do a great job with the filming. They do the actual direct editing, but I'm sort of the executive guy who's saying, okay, we're going to put this clip in here in this photo and structure it that way. But I've got some experience doing radio shows. I still do a science radio show on a student station in Madison. Done a little video editing, but I'm starting to get a lot more interested in doing more of that. But I've had a dual interest in plant genetics and communicating about science. So I feel very lucky that the grant that funds my research also pays for putting together these videos. So I got a chance to both do the science and then talk about some of it.
Speaking of that cost, how do you determine, or is there?
So the approximate cost of these videos, the whole both of the series together, is about $50,000, and that's mainly paying for the guys over at IMDC to do the filming and the direct editing and stuff like that. I mean, I suppose if you were to get your own video editing program, those things are getting pretty cheap now. I got one for about $100 that is pretty good. Not as good as the stuff they're doing here, but you can spend $100 or $200, and then if your campus, for example, has a digital media center, which ours does, you can rent cameras for free and splice things together. It wouldn't be that difficult to do this on an amateur scale. And one of the things we really wanted to have with this is to have DVD quality video, and we're going to have DVDs of these videos when they're all complete. And so this is a little pixelated here, adapting from our movie files to WMV and then screen. But that's another thing that comes up. If you want the high res, it ends up getting a little bit more expensive. Any other questions? Right here.
Yeah. In general, how does resolution compare when you look at it on something like YouTube, or if you did have a DVD?
YouTube.
And really, is it important to have that DVD quality for distribution?
Yeah, so the question was about how does the resolution compare between YouTube and DVD. Well, the videos are pretty good in their raw form. We've got them downloadable on our program website, and they're pretty big. I think it's 640 by 480. And I guess the important thing there is how close you want to see some of the parts. And with YouTube, it's a little grainy, and you see little interlacing lines in a couple of places because it's been re-rendered as you upload it and it converted on YouTube. It seems like you can see what you need to see to get the basic idea. We're thinking to maybe have a couple of written out descriptions with high-res photos if you just want to see the still image of exactly what's going on in there. But I haven't heard any complaints so far. Any other questions? Up here.
Why did you choose to go with YouTube? Couldn't you have just posted them all on your own website?
Well, so the question is why post it on YouTube at all? Well, YouTube gets a lot of people just searching for stuff. For some reason, people are really finding the maize pollination methods videos. And I haven't looked at our own website statistics, but I don't think it draws as many people as YouTube does, and you just put in a search for something about corn and probably find the videos that way. And our YouTube account links to our own site, so people who are viewing the videos there can probably find the higher res that way. But that then becomes an issue of communication. How do you get it out there to people so that they can find it? And YouTube at least helps with that. Thinking of putting it on a couple other sites. So far, as far as the video sharing sites, that's the only one we have them on. Any other questions?
You mentioned funding. Where gets your funding?
So it comes from CSREES USDA grant. My advisor, Sean, was actually applying for it in the middle of the time when I was looking around for a grad school to go to. And any other questions? Okay. Well, thank you very much.